What you doing?
Designing my new 2021 Nissan Kicks online in the Kicks Color Studio. I give each a special name. This one's electric blue, orange, red, white. I call it the gumball machine. You think it's me?
I feel like you're more of a red velvet guy.
Limitless possibilities. With over 100 million available color combinations and Bose Personal Plus system in the boldly new 2021 Nissan Kicks. Bose is the registered trademark of the Bose Corporation. Color combinations include interior and exterior colors. Customization is an available feature subject to availability at participating Nissan dealers. See dealer for details.
Hello everybody, and welcome to another episode of the Five Rounds Podcast. The only podcast out there with the cardio for those deep water championship rounds. I am Mags, and with me today my son Carlos. Carlos, how are you?
Tired, but...
Yeah, back on actually watching some UFC though, which is good, and it's the start of another quite lengthy run of weekly events for UFC, so can't really complain that much. We've just literally finished watching UFC Fight Night Vegas 18, Alistair Overeem versus Alexander Volkov. I'll just quickly run through these prelims. So we started the card in the featherweights with Ode Osborne getting a first round knockout against Jerome Rivera. Then we stayed in the featherweights and we saw Timo Valiev picking up the decision against Martin Day. Third featherweight in a row, Choi Seung-woo getting the decision against Yusef Zalal. And then going into the flyweight division, Lara Procopio picking up the decision against Meatball Molly McCann, who left her gloves in the octagon, maybe signalling that Molly McCann's time as a fighter be done.
No, she put a tweet out basically saying that she did it out for her dad, like she's still got five left in her. Okay. She's not retiring.
Fair enough. Then we went into the women's bantamweight and got another decision, this time Carol Rosa against Jocelyn Edwards. And then a catch weight for the feature prelim with Devontae Smith picking up the second round knockout against Justin Jaynes. Going into the main card, started with Danilo Marquez versus Matt Rodriguez. Oh, what a great fight as well this was to start the main card with some absolute brilliant ground game by Marquez. First round especially, I felt that... he was very much able to take down Rodriguez at will. When it was on the feet, Rodriguez obviously looked a lot heavier hitter, landing a lot more shots, but he just couldn't stop Marquez from taking him down. And the control and the kind of positioning that Marquez had whilst on the ground just really was so impressive for me. So going through the first round and then into the second round, he basically had his way with Rodriguez when he felt like he wanted to go on. Go for a takedown, more often than not he was able to land it and was able to what impressed me about him most was how calm and deliberate he was on the ground. He didn't rush, he just took his time, knew how to work his opponent enough to make him make the mistakes and for him to get in position. And at the end he was able to get the hooks in, latch basically the figure four around the body, was able to get the choke. Rodriguez tried his best to fight it out, but Marquez just absolutely put him asleep, and I'm not even kidding. He was a tough guy for Rodriguez not to tap, and he just went fast asleep, and Daniel Marquez picks up a great submission victory.
Great victory for him. Rodriguez has been one of these guys who's been in the UFC for just over 4 years and win-loss, and I think one overturned. And so this is a good challenge. This was a good challenge for Marcus for his second bout in the UFC.
Yep.
The one thing about Marcus in this fight, even though he controlled the first and second round for me, and like you said, he was able to have his way with Rodriguez, he was seeming to slow down going that halfway through to the second, going to the third. Now, if you were to watch his last fight, he basically did the same going into... Yes, it was a fight. He won the fight decision, but he was absolutely gassed out in that third round, and it looked like he was going looked like he was going into the third round the same. Luckily enough for him, he was able to pull off the rear naked choke, which, again, a lot of people will look at that and wouldn't really notice the little details that goes on in there. And you can tell that's one of the things he practices, because if you get a good rear naked choke, 10 seconds,
mm-hmm.
10 seconds or something, you can put your opponent to sleep. And you can tell this is one of the submissions that he's comfortable with, because he were able to get Rodriguez in a rear naked, and before you even knew it, Rodriguez were trying to fight that hand, and he were already fast asleep.
Yeah. The, a very kind of like, it's a kind of victory that Marquez will look back on as like a massive highlight of his career. And like you said, Rodriguez has been like on and off with wins and losses, but to get your second victory in the UFC in that kind of manner is a great start in your career with the company. Going into the second fight on the main card, Beneil Dariush and Diego Ferreira. Wow, for me this was an amazing fight to watch. I loved every single second of it. It was a clinic for me on really, really good, well-rounded MMA action. Both guys were landing absolute bombs on the feet, both and especially Ferrari, his shots were like absolutely laser accurate, but both were landing big shots. When it come to the ground, Dariush was excellent with the control, but Ferreira was brilliantly working off his back. It was a real kind of like almost like a showcase of all the different kinds of disciplines that you need to be a well-rounded MMA fighter. For me, I felt that Dariush definitely deserved the victory, even though there were quite a few times where he got rocked and he looked like he was out on his feet with the shots from Ferreira. When it come to the ground game, Dariush was just able to get the plenty of top control, plenty of attempts at submissions. It was just a really solid fight for Dariush, and especially with someone who's so higher in the rank from me. I mean, both these guys were on massive win streaks. I think Ferreira was on a 6-fight win streak and Dariush was on a 5-fight win streak. Both guys should have had a way higher ranked opponent than they actually got, but the fight happened and Dariush picked up a great victory. He took a lot of damage, but he's come out of it, and his win streak continues. And unfortunately, he gives Ferreira another loss.
I think you're all wrong as well as the judges. I think Carlos won that fight. Nah, I'm only joking. He deserved victory. But these he fought 6 years ago, something like that.
Yeah, 2014.
Oh, yeah. 7 years. See, this retired, so this could have been looked at as another McGregor Poirier moment. And in a way, Dariush said that he doesn't want to go 1-1 because he wants to go 2-0 and say that he's the better fighter, which is fair enough. You can understand that, but every fighter evolves coming to the certain case, and now you can see both these two fighters generally were ground fighters, because if you were to match them up against strikers in the UFC, you probably wouldn't have them in your top 10 come the end of your list. But when it comes to ground game, are they both credible black belts? Yes, they are. Did Dariush have the best on the ground? Yes, he did. And I don't think that's because Carson's ground game is poor.
No, I thought he was really good on the defensive wise. Maybe not so much in terms of getting his own submission positions off, but defensively, just watching him, it was seriously like watching a showcase, like two. Like going to a seminar and watching two wrestlers or two jiu-jitsu practitioners show you how you like counter and counter moves. It was really good quality ground game for me.
It definitely were. Obviously, both of them, like Dariush, you were able to. Well, both of them, for instance, like I can't remember who pointed it out, but a lot of the times, yeah, they were using the legs to use them as traps to get up, and you don't see a lot of people doing that. You ever see them trying to brute force it or kick off and try and stand up? You don't see a lot of people trapping legs and doing little tiny sweeps that you don't really notice, and these two did them perfectly. But I think Carlos's game were more coming into the fight as a stand-up more than out, because this fight, I don't know how long it got put together. I think it were only like 3 or 4 weeks, or not long, because Darius was actually supposed to be fighting somebody else. Off the top of my head, I can't remember, but he basically accepted the fight, of course, on short notice. So what a professional he is in that concept. So, and I think his opponent, who he was training for, was a hard grappler more than all. So for him to go in there against Carson, fuck it, yeah, I know he's evolved and I know he's got better at striking, and so is Dariush. And I do think Carson's got a little bit better at striking than Dariush. And
yeah,
I think that's why Dariush had to switch his game up with trying to take it to the ground as much, because we've seen both of them have come a long way in the striking department over the last couple of years with some of the spectacular knockout highlight reels that they both share. But Darius was just the better man in this one, and he can move on into the top five rank. And just the end of it, what were you on about? Did you understand that? Was he saying that prayer again? Who was he calling out? Was he calling him out to fight, or saying to UFC, give him a chance to fight?
No, he was saying in the post fight interview that this fight really shouldn't have happened, because obviously he was one up on Ferreira in the first place. And the fact is, both of them have got so much better over the career. They're both on massive fight win streaks. He felt that they both should have got a top five opponent, not facing each other who were just on the edge of the top 10. So that's what he was getting a bit frustrated at, I think.
I think after that performance, Carson, even though he lost, I think he will get a top five, a top 10, not a top five, a top 10 opponent next. He had a performance like that. He lost by a point, and to be honest with you, he came back strong that third round. So to say that you took a beating for 10 minutes straight and then you're able to come back and in the judges' eyes take the fight, not enough to win the fight, but just take that round. And as well, good on him for his coaches. Like DC even shouted him out. Like the coach, some coaches bullshit the fighters more than out, and his coaches straight up to him, do you want to win this fight? Well, if you want to win it, you're going to have to go finish him, because if you don't finish him, you're losing this fight. Simple as that.
To be fair, a lot of the coaches in this event did the exact same thing.
You know, I think I only seen the coaches doing that after when DC said it. Like, mm-hmm. After when the first people did it and DC said something, obviously them coaches have been watching the screens backstage. So it's like, it just makes you wonder if they've done it just to please the fans, because the commentators picked it up. Do you reckon they would have actually done that in the first place? Yeah. Or do you reckon they just would have been one of them coaches who, like I said, bullshits the fighters a lot?
Yeah, who knows? But at the end of the day, having a bit of honesty is refreshing when it comes to your corners.
Absolutely.
But going into the third fight, and this could not have been night and day compared to the Dariush and Ferreira fight, because this was a drag to watch. Manel Capé versus Alexander Pantoja. Pantoja is usually quite an exciting fighter to watch, and to be fair to him, he did his best to try and make this fight at least a little bit entertaining. Unfortunately, his opponent, who was making his debut, just didn't seem to want to engage, didn't seem to want to throw any shots. In the first two rounds, I'd be shocked if he's threw more than 10 shots, because he just didn't look. He looked like he was waiting for a perfect opportunity, which when you're fighting someone as dynamic as Pantoja, you can't wait for that opportunity. You've got to go out and create the opportunity. So for the first two rounds, Pantoja was able to just stick and move, land the kicks and the punches, and then just get out of the way, knowing that Capé was just not going to throw anything. When we did throw some stuff, it was exciting. You can tell he's definitely got some sort of power and skill there, especially the end of the first round. He threw almost like an acrobatic kick, which it did miss, and he ended up going on his back, but at least he showed a little bit of skill and a little bit of quality there. but there was just too little too late of it. Coming into the second round, it was a lot of the same. It was just getting tagged and not giving anything back. Weirdly, though, in the second round, he seemed to be quite comfortable standing like in the form box and taking the shots, but not giving any out, which was really weird. Like he wanted an ass whipping or something. Third round, he did kind of up the pace a little bit, but it was just too little, too late. You can't stand there and basically take a whipping for two rounds and then just think, oh, I'll turn it up in the third round and pick off the victory, because it's not going to happen. And it got even weirder when he was kind of like trying to showboat as if he was winning the fight when he clearly wasn't. Anyway, it went to the judge's decision, and Pantoja got, for me, I thought the victory was well deserved. So I mean, there's not really a lot more to say, because there was not a lot of action in this fight.
Well, that's it. The like you say, Pandora tried his best. I think a lot of people forget about Pandora. I'm just going to call him Alex. I think a lot of people forget about Alex. Like, he's very good off his back. And because he's Brazilian, a lot of people, stereotypically, I think, just jump to the fact that he's Brazilian, he's in the UFC, he must be a Brazilian Jiu-Jitsu guy. And a lot of them are surprised out to find out that he started out in Muay Thai, and he's undefeated in Muay Thai. And, so when it comes to stand-up, he's not bothered about walking you down, because if you try and take him down, he'll welcome it, because he'll either reverse it or counter it or get back to his feet. So he's not too bothered about it. So going on to obviously the Manuel, he seemed like he had the first octagon jitters. Yes, fair enough, he's a professional in other organisations, but the UFC is the biggest one with the biggest stars in it, so you're going to have some sort of nerves coming in there. And he came into the UFC with, I don't want to say a hype train, because it's not exactly a hype train, but he had eyes on him coming into the UFC. He had expectations, if you would. And unfortunately, he didn't live up to them. And I think his career outside of the UFC, doing that sort of Dominic Cruz and Anderson Silva sort of fighting style, works for him against these opponents who aren't elite level opponents, who will get a bit confused with the way your movement, you're so confident with your hands down. And like you say, I think it were in the first round where he did the Ali shuffle, and it was like, some fighters, fair enough, they'll get confused about it. It's like, oh, he's confident with his foot movement, isn't it? Like, Jesus Christ. But yeah, like you say, he didn't do anything. He weren't active. He were making it look like he were active, but he wasn't doing anything. And I think Alex I don't know if it'll come out or if he'll say it, but I do believe Alex hurt his leg, because he was switching stances, but he was very right leg heavy. Like, at the first he was switching, and then as soon as he went to southpaw, Alex was blasting that lead leg, and then he was switching straight back to orthodox. So it was like, oh. And when I saw that, I'm like, he was moving weird on that leg. Like, he weren't, even though he was moving around a lot, sticking and moving, he wasn't switching stances, and he wasn't really throwing the leg a lot. So maybe that could have took it off his game. Obviously, like, McGregor last couple of weekends ago, when Dustin kicked his leg, when you get kicked in the leg, especially in the different parts of the leg, the calf kicks, because that's what Alex was throwing, a lot of them calf kicks at the basically kicking into the ankle. And a Muay Thai guy, it'll kick you all day. It won't. That's what Muay Thai, a lot of Muay Thai's elbows, knees and kicks, a lot of people know it for that. And you can just tell Alex is one of them Muay Thai guys. And He were able to get the job done over an opponent that, like I said, had eyes on him. And I just think Manuel is good. You can see the talent, you can see the potential in him. Now, the cockiness that he brought in, I liked it. I can't say I didn't like it, but you've got a massive group out there who only like that sort of stuff when it comes to winning. Because when they'll quickly jump on you, oh, look at this cocky guy, he's like, oh, look at Kevin Lee, for instance, how much shit he talked and how much shit people give him. And it's like, you can quickly have them fighters and fans sort of turn on you in that sort of aspect. So it's, again, I like his cockiness. And he has got potential there. Just unfortunately, in this fight, he didn't have what it took to actually get on the judges' scorecards in a way. And he were a bit pissed off as well, weren't he? After the decision went out, he were a bit shocked, like he didn't win the fight. And
yeah.
Again, he made it look like he was doing enough. So in his head, he probably were. In his head, he probably thought, yeah, I'm in the right to be pissed off here because look at all this stuff I was doing. I was doing this tagging and moving. I was doing this lot. But I think either DC they both called DC, Dominic Cruz, Daniel Cormier. Which one of the DCs? Can't remember which one they said. But when he goes back and watches that tape, he'll realise how many leg kicks and calf kicks he actually absorbed and how many times he actually got tagged. So it's just one of them. You lose and you learn. But in this case for Alex, you win and you move on.
Yeah, absolutely. Going into the next fight of the two veterans, Claire Guida versus Michael Johnson. And this was exactly what you would expect from a Claire Guida fight. Just action from the opening klaxon to the very end.
Yeah, they feed him cocaine, that guy. I'm telling you, before fights, your right favourite must be there, just with a teaspoon of cocaine, just like, come on, you need to get ready for your fight, come on. He's just wired constantly.
Even at the end, I mean, he picked up the unanimous decision, but even at the end when the ref was holding his arm up for the victory, he was just bouncing. He started off exactly how he would start off, running to the middle of the ring, just landing great shots. Typical Claire Guida, gets cut. He had a cut in his hairline. So he starts bleeding pretty much straight away. Great slam from Guida to Johnson to get him onto the floor. Guida did really well in this first round to keep Johnson down on the floor for quite a while, but Johnson was able to get up. But Guida was just relentless in his attack. So this guy reminds me of Justin Gaethje. He doesn't have any kind of like reverse gear. He just goes forward, whether he's getting hit or not. I mean, we've seen him get knocked out and he's fell forward when he's been knocked out. But he's landing some massive shots. Johnson proving he's got a good chin. Going into the second round, and again, Claire Guida just literally running to the middle of the octagon. I just love him. He's just the passion he's got. He's just got no kind of slowdown. He don't take a break. He's got cardio for days. Again, he was able to get the takedown. Was able to get Johnson in like almost a seated position. Was trying to work the back. But once he realised that he wasn't able to be able to do that, he was able to transition and keep Johnson on the floor. But once they got back to the feet again, Guida was just the quicker with the shots. Johnson was good with landing his own shots, and he has a lot of power. But Guida's just got that kind of volume that he just keeps firing at you for 15, 25 minutes, or whatever kind of matches in. And going into the third round again, it was a case of Guida scoring the takedown, getting the kind of points on the judges' scorecards, and just doing it a plenty of offense to basically pressurize Johnson and really frustrate him. All the way through this third round, Guida had Johnson struggling on the floor, almost got the choke right at the end, but Johnson was able to fend it off. Great, kind of like, and almost like the Dariushin Ferreira fight from earlier, but a great kind of showing of ground game from Guida, and great showing of defence from Johnson. But yeah, Claire Guida picks up a well-deserved unanimous victory.
Or strangulizer. Reckon that'll slow down a bit.
A shotgun. The only thing that's slowing Claire Guida down is a shotgun.
There's absolutely no. You wouldn't think he's been around for absolutely donkey's years. He's
still his 30th UFC fight.
Unbelievable. Over 80 professional fights these two have had combined, and it's just absolutely mental for be near enough as well, most of them being in the UFC, they've been in the UFC that long, and you, it's one of them fights what you look at, it's like you don't really have a dog in the fight, it's like you like them both, you don't really, don't really matter who sort of wins, you're going to feel bad for one of them and you're going to feel happy for another one of them, and in this case, Johnson does seem to lose the fight because of what he's known for, his lack of wrestling defence, and for someone who's such high level and been around for so long, you'd think that, I don't know, something had evolved in his game over time with that sort of stuff. Maybe it's just one of them certain circumstances where it's, you can't teach an old dog new tricks, but Clay Guida did exactly what you think Clay Guida would do. He's got such a basic game, but that's what makes him exciting. He can use it, because it's either his wrestling and his pressure, or his right hand, or his head kick. He hasn't really got much more than that, and just to say them three things, and he's still fighting at elite level and winning, he's just amazing for him to say that he's been around for such a long time, and the three weapons that elite athletes have got, I'd beat that every day, and he makes it work for him just with how much pressure he's able to just put on you, and just from start to finish, he does not stop. He's honestly like a wild dog. Once that collar's come off, he's not stopping up until he gets healed again, and that's exactly what Clay Guida is. And with his wrestling, his trademark, obviously going from Uriah's team, what's it called?
Alpha Male.
Being an alpha male, they're such. Because they generally, the smaller guys come from there, and with the smaller guys, they've got a lot more energy, a lot more faster, a lot more sharper, and when they're wrestling there, it's just wrestling drills, and a lot of people, especially in America, they'll know with how much wrestling it takes a lot of stamina out of you as well, so you use a lot of strength, and it builds you up, you get stronger from wrestling, and that's what Clay Guida's been able to do, because he's been doing it for so long. That's why he's been able to have good cardio over so many years, and been able to actually keep that sort of pace over the actual 3-5 minute rounds that he's having in the UFC. And as well with the guillotine, he's well known for his guillotine. In this fight, he had it opened up a couple of times, and he just thought, "Fuck it, I'm not going to do that. I'm just going to punch him in the face again and see if he can hit me back and see if I'm still awake afterwards." And that's one of the other exciting things about Clay Guida. He's one of them fighters who you don't care who he's fighting, you just want to watch him fight because you know it's going to be a good fight. And as soon as he started bleeding, I thought, oh, here we go again. Scar tissue's opened up, this is going to be a bit of a bloodbath. And I was surprised how much it didn't actually, from where the cut were at the top of the head, they usually piss out with blood there. I think his body's just been sick of bleeding that way. He's bled that much. His body's just like, no, fuck you. I'm not giving you any more blood. I'm not bleeding.
He's just run out of blood.
He's just run out of blood. And he must be. He's like a zombie. He just walks you down. Just walks you down and he just doesn't stop. Well, a good victory for him, but this was more of a moral victory for him. Obviously, he's already a Hall of Famer, a legend, and probably not long off retiring. Can't really say that he's going to be in a title picture soon or a top five fight, because that's not going to be the case, but he's just one of that. I'm happy to see what he does if he retires, fair enough, but if he has one or two more, I'll watch him.
So let's get into these two core main event cards, main event fights. Wow. if you were kind of that a casual UFC fan and you weren't really impressed with the ground game, these two next fights are going to send you home happy.
Yeah, just so watch it, take less than 5 minutes.
Yeah. So we go first into the bantamweight division with our former lightweight champion Frankie Edgar taking on the number two ranked Corey Sandhagen. Corey come into this fight actually quite pissed off that he wasn't in the fight against Petr Yan. He felt he deserved the fight over Aljamain Sterling, which I don't particularly agree with, but I can understand him being pissed off because he is the number two rank.
And
he's just come up. Was he pissed off for? He's not long just come off a loss from Aljamain Sterling.
I know, but you know what these fighters are like. But if he was pissed off, it was certainly Frank Edgar who took the brunt of it. Started off fairly in a typical Frankie Edgar way, where he comes and delivers, starts like trying to chop his opponent's legs down, really kind of pushing the pressure. Sandhagen was able to avoid some shots, and just as Frankie was coming in to rush him, Sandhagen just jumped, and I think I'm going to have to go back and watch the fight, but I think it was the only shot that he threw. He landed a perfect knee, and he killed Frankie Edgar. Frankie Edgar was clean out from the knee. He fell head first, hit the floor. His toes were all curled up. His muscles seized up. Corey Sandhagen looked absolutely devastated that he'd done this to who is like essentially a living legend in Frankie Edgar. He certainly wasn't in any kind of mood to celebrate. He was really concerned for his opponent, which is a real touch of class. But yeah, 28 seconds and Frank Edgar is knocked clean out.
Yeah, you know what, I were out about that, but now you said that and you say you were pissed off because you were going to be like, nah, fuck your flying knee. how stupid can you sound, like, you, 7th of June 2020, your first round submission loss to Aljamain Sterling. How do you think in any way that you're going to, that you should be next to, you lose a fight, then you're next in front, then you're next in line for a title shot. Corey, explain that. How does that work out? In what? And fair enough if you was a massive name in the UFC fought as a money fighter here, but let's face it, you ain't got that bargaining power, mate. That flying knee went alright though, I'm not gonna lie. Frankie Edgar, his full body were clenched, his feet were clenched, his toes were clenched, his biceps, his trap, everything. I feel sorry for him because it was just one of them horrible knockouts where you just think, fuck, I want to see his CT scan.
Yeah.
And they don't let you see it. That's what pisses me off. As someone who's a sports science student, they don't let you see that sort of stuff. And it's like, I want to see it because I think it did actually educate a lot more people on the respect that these fighters deserve. And not only that, enlightens the fact of the danger behind it. As you've got a lot of people out there who want to be fighters and a lot of people out there who are very ignorant to the sport. And if you were to promote this side as well, I think you'd have a lot of more people training smarter, not sparring as hard constantly. I know a lot of gyms out there and I know a lot of instructors personally that as their fighters sparring hard week in, week out, and we all know that's not good, especially when you're taking heavy headshots in sparring and then you're still fighting and taking a lot of headshots. We've had, let's say, advocates come out for it, like, Max Holloway, Tony Ferguson, people out. He's come out and said that they haven't generally sparred, or if they have, they've done very little and it's been very light. And it's a lot safer, and if you were to just release some of that information, obviously with fighters' discretion, if they're happy to release their information, that's fair enough, but I think it'd just be knowledgeable for fans to be able to see that the other side's the part, instead of just going or getting in the cage and entertain us. I think it'd be, instead of just seeing these photos afterwards of a fighter with stitches in going, oh, I had a brilliant night, yeah, I lost, but thanks for the support. And I think they'd have a little bit more support if they found out a lot, what's going on, a lot more backstage than what's just getting portrayed to them through a camera.
So let's go into this main event. Alistair Overeem making a big deal of this being his kind of last push for UFC gold, that kind of one title that's eluded him throughout his storied career. Taking on one of our favourite fighters just because of the way he laid the smack on Greg Hardy, Alexander Volkov. I don't know how to feel about this fight. From the very beginning of the fight, I felt that Overeem didn't
look like he either wanted to be there, or there was his drop off in kind of energy and skill was just, it fell off a cliff, because from the first shot he took, he was cowering and turtling up on against the cage. Landed some good shots all through the two rounds that the fight went through, but every time Volkov landed something, it was almost, if you remember Brock Lesnar being in the UFC, when he took shots to the face, it hurt him and he didn't like it. This was what it felt like with Overeem, and we're talking about a guy who's took shots from the very best of fighters. This is a guy who not long ago went five rounds with one of the hardest hitting people on the planet in Jairzinho Rozenstruik. And this guy was unable to handle the shots from Volkov. I mean, I like Volkov, but he's not the biggest, strongest heavyweight. He's not the hardest hitter in the division. He's more like a Stefan Struve in terms of power than he is a Rozenstruik. But every time he landed a shot, Overeem looked hurt. He looked worried. He looked like he was panicky. The first round, Volkov just absolutely was dominating, just aggressive up against the cage, aggressive in the middle of the octagon. Coming into the second round, you could see the damage that Volkov did in that first round, and you could see all the blood all over his face. And Volkov was just, he was just able to land his shots as and when he wanted. There was no defence from Overeem apart from covering up and turtling when he got hit. He tried to go for a takedown, wasn't able to land it. Volkov landed a good couple of shots, which led to Overeem kind of like rushing to the fence to lean up against it. Again, went down for the takedown, couldn't get it. And he just seemed worn out. And Volkov hit him whilst Overeem was kind of like backing down. And Overeem, it's not even like he got knocked down from the shot. It's like he gave up. He went down to his knees, covered his face, and before Volkov could even land any kind of like shots to finish the fight, Herzog ruled the fight off. And I don't blame him, because Overeem just didn't look like he wanted to be there, and Volkov picked up a really good victory.
Yeah, it's like you were saying, you've covered majority of the fight. Like you say, when he went down, I think it was more of the case of his nose is definitely shattered. His nose is fucked completely, and you can tell that around the blood were pouring out of it. And it hurts once your nose is gone, and you're still having, like, this is a heavyweight throwing his hands at you, and just a big truck hitting you inside at like face and in front of face. Once your nose is already popped, and once it's already gone and shattered, every single time you're getting punched on it, it's just getting broke even more. It hurts even more. It's getting pushed more and more into your face, and it's throbbing. You don't even have to. When I spoke, luckily enough, I've not had my nose broken properly like that, but I have spoke to people in our gym, one of the biggest guys, and I remember it like it was yesterday. I was only like 13 or 14, and Big Ben White had the heavyweight that we had in our gym. He had his nose, one of the fights he had was a bloodbath. Him and the guy walked out of it, and don't know how that didn't get called off due to blood or for how much, because they were both just pissing out with blood. And I remember Ben's face. His face wasn't that bad. He wasn't bruised or battered. He didn't have like swollen eyes. Cheek were a bit swollen, though, but his nose was just broke and just plastered into his face. And I were asking him about like the pain and all that sort of stuff. And he was saying like some stuff, like when your adrenaline's kicking in, you don't feel a lot of stuff. But stuff like that, once it's constant there and it's right like in front of your brain, like your senses are right there, and your senses are, it's not taking, it's just right there, say, oh, he's fucking hurting this, and you're getting so much back that, I don't care who you are, you can only take so many hits like that before you think, fuck this is not worth it, like, I'm going to have to go down, like, look at how much punish Rory McDonald took in that Robbie Lawler fight, and he had to go down eventually, and you're just surprised how much punishment you can take. And I think it's, that sort of stuff goes along the lines of how much can you take, and Overeem has took so much punishment and give so much punishment over the last decade or so, because he's been around the block for so long. And going on to his training, obviously you were saying this is his last run and at the title, and he wanted to be his best run, and fair enough, I admired his decision to do that. Personally, I didn't think it was going to work, and unfortunately I was right, it didn't work out for him. But when he was saying about how he only trains once and then has a good couple of days rest, but he'll do that hard, like, it's my personal opinion, fair enough. If I do a training regime for my friend Reese, doesn't mean it's going to work for my friend Connor. Mm-hmm. Yeah, everyone's an individual, so everyone works separately. And so, yeah, it's fair enough. That could work for him, but my opinion on that is, why, if your body can't accept the training and that much you're doing it, why kill yourself in one day to take 4 or 5 days off to recover and rest? Why not just space it out, train smart, couple of days, then have a rest day? Because I think that's what got him in this far, just the inactivity in the gym, not just, because he's had a lot of activity in the octagon. It's not like he's took a three year hiatus and thought, oh, I'm just going to come back now. He's been in the octagon, and so that's why I just think his time in the gym, he's just, on personally, on that sort of level that he competes at in the UFC, if you're one of these fighters that only can go into the gym once or twice a week. Like, look at Derek Lewis, how much trouble he were having with his back, and then he were only training. Well, he could only train for like half an hour at a time before his back were just in agony, and he felt like he couldn't stand up, and that sort of were wearing on him. And it's the exact same with Alistair. He's not getting the time in the gym, so he's not doing the techniques that he should be doing, he's not doing the drills that he should be doing. And whereas Volkov, on the other hand, he's evolved in the game. We've gone back to, like, look at when I said earlier about Michael Johnson, about you think someone like that could evolve in his wrestling defence game, and you can see where Volkanovski's evolved in that department over the last couple of years. When he just, like I say, I think they said it just over a little over 4 years ago, he debuted with the UFC, and mm-hmm. he was a bit on a rocky patch where it were one win, one loss, two wins, one loss, and he couldn't seem to get his foot into the right place. And I think that were all because of how many people was trying to take him down. Obviously, in his last promotions, he was a bigger guy, more intimidating guy. No one's just going to shoot in on him as quick. So his opponents were basically allowing him to use his long reach and use his heart to basically get him off. And a lot of people can say, yeah, that doesn't count because they both had 80-inch reach, but at the end of the day, Volkov was a taller opponent, so yeah, he's always got that high ground, so it doesn't matter if you've got the bigger reach on him, he's going to be able to use that reach better than you are. He's punching down where you're punching up. It's just simple, it's science, you can't argue with it. But where he's evolved in that game, where in the UFC, a lot of people aren't going to fucking stand there on the end of his punches and let him just, like, shoot off. So they have been shooting at him to try and take him down, and he's had to deal with that. It's all in the gym, in the octagon, people trying to take him down constantly. So his wrestling defense has improved so much now where he can just let his hands go free. He can open up his shots because he knows if someone shoots on him, he's comfortable and confident enough that his wrestling defense will help him out, and the skill set that he's evolved in the gym will help him out enough in the octagon to where he can just defend the takedown, scuffle it, right, I'm back to neutral ground where you're in front of me, eating my punches where I want you to be. And if he does that, because he's only young, he's got a very good fight and a good prospect for that heavyweight division. Like Stipe Miocic came out earlier, I think it was either yesterday, saying, I know I'm only getting older, but at the end of the day, I'm getting wiser as well. I think he's getting fighting with Ngannou soon, and he said at the end of the day, yeah, Ngannou might have got better, but so have I, and the outcome's mm-hmm. going to be the same. And I think Volkov is in that position where if he's on the right track, he could shine to be that next person in the position to where Stipe is. And it just makes it a lot easier, because if he is on that right path, he's got to look at the people who's in front of them, because if Stipe goes, you've only got people like Bones and Ngannou to look at, Rosenstrick, so people who are still heavy hitters and people who are going to give you a challenge. So yes, you can do that to Overeem, but can you do this to the top five and top three?
Yeah, you make a lot of good points there. It's just a shame that this is how Overeem's going to go out in his career. And I suppose it happens to a lot of fighters. You don't realise that you suddenly can't hack it at the top anymore. These young fighters, and this just shows that we've said time and time again how quickly MMA is evolving, and it is leaving a lot of the older guard fighters behind.
It definitely is. Like, you're hearing a lot more fighters. I agree with Conor on the sense when he came out a couple of months ago basically saying that a lot of the older ones should be choosing the fighters rather than just accepting the fights that the UFC are putting in front of them, because I understand that a lot of them are going to be looking for some money fights. A lot of them haven't got the sort of financial benefits or the career benefits that a lot of others have got. So a lot of them who have been fighting for a long time are going to want a couple of paydays to actually just get out and enjoy a little happy retirement with a little bit of a rainy day fund to support them. And I think that's where Conor's idea comes into play with these fighters. Let them sort of make their own league, make like a little legends league, where it's people like Cerrone, people like all these fighters who know that they're not going to want to chase for a title, but they still have the love for fighting. Make that sort of stuff. I think it'll be good for them. They said you're separating the bunch, aren't you? The people who still want to fight and that, like, you're giving them fight, but then you're not feeding them to the young upcoming fighters. Personally, I think them young upcoming fighters should be fighting the other upcoming fighters, because in this day and age, there's too many fighters who go, oh, I've beat that name, so I need that name. It's like, just because you've beat him, like, would you have beat him 5 or 10 years ago when he was kicking the shit out of everybody else? You got to ask yourself them sort of questions. Beating him now when he's 10 years down the line is not really that impressive. So it's, that's how I look at it.
So, next week, we have got another numbered UFC event. And it's a massively stacked card. Gillian Robertson's at back, taking on Miranda Maverick. We've got Ricky Simone and Brian Keller. And they're just the early prelims. On the televised prelims, Pollyanna Viana against Mallory Martin. Bilal Mohammed against Diego Lima. Jim Miller against Bobby Green. And then a main card, we've got Pedro Munhoz versus Jimmy Rivera. Ian Harnish taking on Kelvin Gastelum, Macy Barber taking on Alexa Grasso, and then the main event, the welterweight championship on the line, Kamaru Usman taking on perhaps his most dangerous opponent yet in Gilbert Burns. So that's going to be a war of a fight. So definitely come back and listen to what we thought of that show next week. That's it for today. Before I go, definitely go on the Shooting the Sports YouTube channel and check out Carl's side project of interviews with up and coming fighters and coaches in MMA. He's absolutely killing it on YouTube and on Podbean with the numbers. So yeah, go and give him a listen there. Follow the show at DJ Kirby. Follow Carlos. Follow me at DJ Kirby. Should I say follow Carlos at Kirby_Carlos. Follow the show at Five Rounds Pod on Facebook, on Instagram, on Twitter. Follow all the networks: Visionaries Global Media, Chairshot Radio Network, and Shooting the Sports Ish. Thank you all for listening, and that is the end.
Quick shout out to Juliana Robertson, her head coach, Tim Thomas. Stay tuned for a little secret behind that in the next couple of weeks. Adios, amigos.
It all starts with an invitation to experience Lexus. To start the ignition. To feel confident. To be connected to everything. It starts as an invitation to drive a Lexus vehicle. But it becomes a dynamic experience. the Invitation to Lexus sales event. Your invitation is always open, but the offers only last through March 31st. Experience amazing at your Lexus dealer. Click the banner to discover more.
Is QuickBooks slowing your business down? Do you have challenges managing inventory, project profitability, or just getting paid fast enough? Get your business to a better place and graduate to NetSuite today. Stop paying for multiple systems that don't give you the information you need when you need it. Ditch the spreadsheets and all the old software you've outgrown. Now is the time to upgrade to NetSuite by Oracle, the world's number one cloud business system. NetSuite gives you visibility and control over your financials, HR, inventory, e-commerce, and more. Everything you need, all in one place, instantaneously. Whether you're doing a million or hundreds of millions in revenue, save time and money with NetSuite.
Join the over 24,000 companies using NetSuite right now. Let NetSuite show you how they'll benefit your business with a free product tour at netsuite.com/info. Schedule your free product tour right now at netsuite.com/info, netsuite.com/info.